Ghoulish greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of Bobby Mackey and Dustin DeFell, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't buy the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the Rocky Mountains to the Mojave Desert, from tiny village to large city, and everything in between, it is greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Turriff, Scotland, Jeanette, Pennsylvania, St. Lambert, Canada, Spokane, Washington, Mililani Town, Hawaii, and Wamego, Kansas. Thanks, everyone. As always, it is greatly appreciated. Welcome to part two of the old Joliet prison. Last week, I talked about some of the history and notable inmates, and today we dive deep into riots and executions, and yes, of course, hauntings. This prison may look familiar, as it has been featured in a handful of movies and shows, such as the 1980 movie The Blues Brothers, Derailed, Let's Go to Prison, the show Prison Break, and Ghost Adventures. Riots and prisons. You know, they kind of go hand in hand, don't you think? So on June 5th of 1918, a short-lived riot takes place here. Rioters started several fires, one inmate would die, and it wasn't by the hands of authorities. He was trapped in a building that was on fire, started by his fellow inmates, and the doomed inmate jumped out of the building to save himself, fracturing his skull in the process. Very sad stuff. A heavy presence of military guards were here for a month after the riot took place. Now fast forward to April 23rd, 1975, where another riot breaks out. Another inmate will die, and this time he was murdered by his fellow inmates. New York Times shares this. About 200 inmates took control of a wing of the Joliet Correctional Center yesterday, and for a time held 12 hostages. 8 persons were injured in the incident. The slain inmate, Herbert Catlett, 29 years old of Chicago, was a former member of the Black Pea Stone Nation Street Gang and was killed when he entered the cell block being held by the prisoners. Warden Fred Finkbeiner said Mr. Catlett tried to quell the disturbance shortly after it began, but was stabbed to death by other inmates. Mr. Finkbeiner said the prison takeover had stemmed from his decision to transfer 3 gang leaders to the Mendard Penitentiary in southern Illinois. He said he wanted to break up gang members in the Joliet Center because they had been causing trouble.
Let the bombs fall down on me and break me like a porcelain doll.
There are a couple of executions I want to talk a little bit about. First, the 1866 execution of George Chase. George goes down in history as being not only the first person to be executed at Joliet, but also just the first person in Chicago. He's hanged in July of 1866. Now, they didn't even know his true identity, as he would not give the authorities his real name. His conviction was horse thievery. He would try to escape at least one time, and this was during the Civil War in 1864. And during his brazen escape, he attacks the deputy warden, hitting him in the head with a club. Now, sadly, he would die weeks later due to his injuries. Chase was then charged with murder. He breathes his last breath on the gallows on July 27th of 1866. He never had any family visit him or anything of that sort. nor were there any there for the day of his execution. It was literally just ministers that came to visit, and they were present for his death day. They prayed for him and with him, constantly reading from their Bibles. When asked if he had any final words, he said, "I don't think I'm guilty. I don't see any proof that I murdered that man. I think I've got as good an explanation of that as you have." When a hood is placed over his head, he continues speaking, "I'm not ready for that yet. I'm as innocent a man as any of you. I am as innocent a man as any in the United States. I admit that hanging is justice, but hanging for a thing a man ain't guilty of and can't prove I am guilty of is another thing. It ain't justice." He was indeed a talker. He speaks once more right before he dies, saying, "Gentlemen, I am to be slaughtered." Yeah, okay, dude. Sayonara. Then there's the October 1935 execution of Gerald Thompson. An Illinois newspaper reports about it on October 15th, 1935, titled "Gerald Thompson, a Ravish Killer, Dies in Electric Chair After He Embraces Catholic Religion." And it reads this. "Fortified by a newly embraced religion, Gerald Thompson, 26 years old, was electrocuted in the old Joliet prison earlier today for the ravish murder of pretty Mildred Hallmark, 19-year-old Peoria cafeteria hostess. His executioners strapped him into the lethal chair at 12:15 a.m., and prison authorities officially termed him dead 1 minute and 40 seconds later. Two priests of the Catholic faith comforted him in his last hours before he went to the death chamber, where among the witnesses sat John Hallmark, father of the slain girl. The doomed man's last words, as relayed by his guards, were this, "I hold no malice toward anybody. Forgive everybody. I'm sorry for all my sins, and may God have mercy on my soul and accept me." In addition to the priest's counsel, Thompson was bolstered at the end by a ladder from a young woman in Peoria who had stood staunchly by him. This missive, which Thompson turned over to his mother as she left him, adjured him to be the game and trust in God. The crime for which Thompson was executed was branded one of the most brutal in Peoria crime annals. Miss Hallmark was struck a heavy blow and she resisted the advances of her escort, and her body was found in a cemetery ditch the next morning. Suspicion was cast on Thompson when other young women told of having been attacked by him too. In 1915, a murder takes place that rocks the entire prison and the community. All hell breaks loose when the warden's wife, she's brutally murdered. And the culprit is believed to be an inmate there named Joe Campbell, better known as Chicken Joe Campbell. Findagrave.com shares more details. The title screams, "Wife of Warden Allen murdered. Mrs. E.W. Allen, 34, the victim of a convict's murderous instincts." And it reads this. "Left alone in an apartment with Negro trustee, while husband was out of town, she meets death. Mrs. Edmund M. Allen, the young wife of the warden of the state penitentiary here and former comic opera favorite, was found dead and burned today in her bed in the warden's suite in the penitentiary. A long wound on the left temple and the rapidity with which the flames charred the body almost beyond recognition was held as evidence that she had been attacked by a convict, stunned by a blow to the head when she resisted, and her night clothing soaked with alcohol and ignited. A bottle which had contained alcohol was found in the room, together with a heavy water bottle, which might have been the instrument with which she was struck. A close medical examination showed that Mrs. Allen had not suffered otherwise. Mrs. Allen was formerly a prima donna of a company representing the Merry Widow. Her maiden name was Odette Maes Bordeaux, and her former home was Los Angeles, California, where an aunt and cousin live. She was 34 years old. Joseph Campbell, a Negro convict who acted as the Allen's house servant and who lived in the warden's suite, was locked in solitary confinement after a committee of prison officials had investigated the fire. He will be charged with murder, it is said. Fears of a demonstration by the convicts caused the suspicion of all Sunday exercises, and all the convicts were locked in their cells all day. Warden Allen left last night for West Baden, Indiana, and, except for Campbell, his wife was alone in the suite. The coroner's inquest, set for tonight, was postponed to allow the warden to reach the city and to permit further investigation. Campbell, who was serving an indeterminate sentence for manslaughter from 1 year to life, told the committee, which was headed by William D. Heiss, former state's attorney and a close friend of the prison official and his wife, Mrs. Allen was alone in the warden's suite. The west door of her bedroom was locked, but the north door was unlocked, so I could come in if she wanted anything or called me. I took her the morning papers at 5:40 o'clock, then filled a water bottle with ice water and took it to her bedside. Then I took her pet dog out for a walk, as I do every morning. When I left the room, Mrs. Allen was in bed. When I returned from the front yard, I saw smoke in the suite, and John Simpson, a trustee in the linen room in the warden's service, and another trustee named Cohen were trying to fight their way through the smoke to the bed. We called the prison fire department. Mrs. Allen's nightclothes and the bedclothes burned so fiercely that the fire department could make no impression on the flames, which burned themselves out in half an hour. The firemen prevented the blaze from extending beyond the bed, and by the time the Joliet Fire Department arrived, the flames had burned themselves out. Dr. J.T. Benson, former prison physician and an old friend who examined the body, announced that the wound probably had not been sufficient to cause her death, which he believed resulted from the burns. It probably had rendered her unconscious, he said, after which indications were the murderer sprinkled the bedclothes and her nightclothes with alcohol and set them afire. The water bottle, which the Negro said he had taken into the bedroom, was broken and the fragments were found near the bed. The wound in Mrs. Allen's temple might have been caused by such a weapon, Dr. Benson said, unquote. Chicken Joe was found guilty and he was sentenced to hang at the old penitentiary's gallows, but you didn't hear me talk about that execution, did you? So, the governor, he would later commute that sentence to life instead. Did he really do it? Don't know. Like, really, what would have been his motive? It's not like he was in a jail cell every single second of his life. You know, he had 1 year to life. If he behaved good, and they obviously trusted him enough to be in the same home as the warden's wife, you'd think he would have had it pretty good, much better than a lot of the other fellow inmates. Which is another thing. Maybe he didn't have a motive. Maybe he didn't do it. And maybe a jealous inmate did it. Who the hell knows? He was supposedly the only person there with her. But, like he did, routinely walk that dog. He came back. It could be possible that, yeah, maybe somebody else went in there. If he can leave, maybe somebody could come back in. Now, other deaths include the 1864 murder of Joseph Clark, a corrections officer. Then, in 1915, the ever-so-brutal murder of Deputy Warden Peter Klein by prison inmates takes place. Three people would be executed for this crime. Officer Down Memorial Page, a page that I have followed for so many years, shares this about the Deputy Warden. Deputy Warden Peter Klein was stabbed and beaten to death in his office at the Joliet State Prison. Seven inmates had asked to see the warden, and when he entered his office, they attacked him. He was stabbed with a knife and scissors and hit over the head with an iron bar. The suspects then took a guard and trustee hostage and escaped from the prison. The two hostages were later tied to a tree as the inmates continued their escape. Five of the seven escapees were captured within 5 days. A police officer and posse member were shot and wounded during the arrest near Lenoir, Illinois. The remaining two suspects were eventually apprehended, and on November 26, 1926, six of the seven suspects were convicted of murder and sentenced to death. On March 12, 1927, the six convicted suspects staged a daring escape at the Will County Jail in Joliet. Three of the suspects were subdued by the guards. The other three, with the help of a guard, escaped. They forced a cab driver to drive them to South Chicago, where they were stopped by three Chicago police officers. In an exchange of gunfire with the suspects, patrolman Leo Grant of the Chicago Police Department was shot and killed, while another officer and the cab driver were seriously wounded. One of the suspects was mortally wounded, one was captured, and the other suspect escaped. The captured suspect had also been convicted of killing active Lieutenant Terrence Wyans, was returned to jail, and executed by hanging July 15, 1927 at the Will County Jail. Two of the three suspects who guards stopped were executed by hanging the very same day, on October 10, 1928 at the Will County Jail. The third suspect was the last person to be executed by hanging in the state before the method was replaced by electrocution. He was also serving a life sentence for the murder of Park policeman Harry Busey of the South Park District Police Department, Illinois, on January 26, 1922. Warden Klein was survived by his wife and mother, unquote. So what is crazy to me is that these people, these very dangerous individuals, escaped with the help of a guard. And after this escape, they were able to murder at least two law enforcement officers. Like, I don't know about you, but in my opinion, I hope this dude, the so-called guard, was identified, right? And he should have been hanged too. Because he might not have specifically done the killings, but he helped these guys escape. And because of that escape, other lives were taken. I mean, seriously, what did this fucking guard think they were going to do? Go home and bake cookies and play Go Fish? Come on. Every action they did, he's responsible for too. Now, you know, some suicides took place here too, including that of a woman named Louisa Rose. Her method was an interesting one, eating soap, so much for a final last meal. And a more gruesome one was conducted by inmate George Kelly, who takes his very own life in the prison's wire factory, using the wire to wrap around his neck and morbidly being yanked into one of the prison's machines. Sounds like a bad movie, right? Not real life. Talk about a horrible way to go. And then we have the old agers. Inmate Charles Lindwall dies of old age at 98 years old. He murdered a saloon keeper named Peter Bollenbach in June of 1899. Witnesses saw Charles walk up to the victim and yell out, "Pay me my money I left with ya." Well, the saloon keeper denied having any money and did not know what the hell he was talking about. He was drunk. It is then that Charles takes out his revolver, aims it at Peter. A constable was at the saloon and approaches the armed man. And a struggle between lawman and soon-to-be murderer takes place. A shot is fired, and Peter drops to the ground. Death is instantaneous for him. Locals defended the late saloon keeper, claiming he was the friendliest man in those parts. And he was a very honest man too. And that the killer, who was a temperamental drunk, did not know what the hell he was talking about. The victim was a family man with a wife and four kiddos, two boys and two girls. He was well adored, admired, and respected within his community. Now, initially, Charles was given the death penalty, but later on given life instead. And boy, he just kept chugging along until almost 100 years old when the murderer finally dies. Justice is finally served. So the prison has long since been believed to be haunted. Guests and staff have experienced being scratched by unseen forces, negative and angry spirits in a penitentiary. No shocker there, my friends. The apparition of a very tall man, think like Shaq, right, has been seen, always in a blue jumpsuit. And the cell houses are home to shadowy figures that dart and dash about here and there. Then there's the supposed singing ghost of Joliet. Another haunting? Maybe not. Regardless, this tale is worth sharing. I found it on American Ghost Walks, and I'll read a chunk of this article, but it's worth a whole read at some point. It's a very long article and touches down on a lot of really neat stuff. So it reads this. In the summer of 1932, thousands of residents from Joliet and surrounding areas as far as Chicago flocked to the old Joliet Prison Convict Cemetery in search of a singing ghost. Said have been seen wandering among the graves, crooning hymns in a dreamy voice. As was typical at the time, many of these early ghost hunters came armed with shotguns, knives, and other weapons. The search became a sensation, drawing as many as 5,000 people a night to the area, until the ghost was revealed to be, or so they claimed, a very much alive inmate at the prison, William Chrysler, who reportedly enjoyed singing on the way to and from his duties working the pumps at the nearby prison quarry. That seems like that would be kind of like a movie, right? Like, oh, the prison life of these inmates, and then all of a sudden this like, oh, the singing, and oh God, it's just this dude. Like, that would make an interesting movie. I'd watch it. But then it would be pretty epic at the end of the movie where he eventually dies and he is singing as a ghost in the cemetery. So in the same article, they mention yet another ghost mob type incident. Incidentally, 1932 wasn't the first time Joliet citizens had formed a ghost-seeking mob, or the first time a ghost had been associated with the old convict cemetery. Earlier in 1909, a ghost panic had erupted in Joliet when a ghost was seen in the city's third ward. Parties of ghost hunters formed to the hunt the phantom, including a gang of children who claimed to see a filmy, feminine form sitting in the weeds by the side of a neighborhood farm road. One child claimed to see the ghost moving towards the cemetery near the AME church. This was likely a church on Fairmont Hill, and the cemetery likely the old convict cemetery. Hundreds of residents came out in search of the spirit, many heavily armed with various weapons. Around the same time, a buzz erupted over the possible haunting of the clock tower in nearby St. John's Catholic Church on Hickory Street. Alas, a very real woman was found to be probably behind the tell. As one reporter reckoned, those who have made a study of the case are firmly convinced that a woman of questionable mental capacity is responsible for the scare. But whatever the facts may be, that the case is the most peculiar in the recent history of the city had been firmly fixed. There was a time when spooks and haunted houses were common, but the day has long since passed. Yeah, right. Hold my beer. So the old convict cemetery, it overlooks the prison property, obviously, and now there are two cemeteries that are dedicated to the inmates, not just for Joliet, for another prison as well. And altogether, 437 inmates rest here eternally. American Ghost Walks also talks about quite an interesting escape plan, and quite daring, may I add, and some may consider it just straight up suicidal. And to sum it up, a funeral for an inmate who recently died was taking place one day, and this living inmate, who was really just like had escape on his mind, he wanted to get the hell out of there, and he takes the body out of the coffin. He pokes holes in that coffin so he could go in it. And after dinner, they are ready to put the coffin on the wagon hearse and head to the cemetery. He thinks, okay, he could escape from there, make his escape, right? None will be the wiser. Well, let's just say that this inmate's plan backfired severely. He is sweating profusely. Those holes he put in the coffin were puny at best, and he was desperate for some air. He was suffocating. He was panicking. He can't take it anymore. He jumps out of the coffin. The poor driver of the hearse, who was also an inmate, mind you, runs back to the prison, convinced that the once living impaired inmate came back from the dead and was very much alive, or his ghost was just trying to scare the hell out of him. This man, who almost escaped, would die the following year. His escape plan, obviously, was a major failure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, that would be like a movie, right? Suicide was discussed in this episode. If you or someone you know is depressed or have suicidal tendencies, please know you are not alone. And I say that with the utmost love in my heart. There are other options than such a permanent one, such as suicide. Your parents, your family, your loved ones, your friends will be forever grateful. Please call the suicide hotline, which is 1-800-273-8255. And again, that number is 1-800-273-8255.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all terrific. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to fret. You could hit up any of those podcast platforms such as Spotify, Deezer, Castbox, Downcast, Pocket Cast, Podcast Republic. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Products Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and I will
see you next week.